Okay, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It's a privilege to be able to talk to you, even if it's a rather sudden change of gears from everything else we've been doing. But please believe me that although it's a fairly heavy title for the session, there really is a lot in our faith that addresses the issue of nuclear weapons. And there's a lot about nuclear weapons which I think asks us to think twice about perhaps what is expected of us as Christians in this era. And just let me say that if nuclear weapons, or when nuclear weapons are abolished, Geneva will have a lot of prominence in the situation that brings that about. And I think members of this parish have worked on this issue for as long as this parish has existed. Sitting in front of us is Peter Herbie, Peter Prove, maybe not, but also working on it right now, and going back all the way to the start of the World Council of Churches, and the first person in Peter Prove's position today. What I wanted to do was tell you two little stories as an entry point and open up fairly early to some of your ideas about how this issue relates to our faith. The first proposition up there, how does faith tell us about nuclear weapons? And then I'll give you some summary material that pulls together some prepared thought on that topic, and then we'll move to the second half. So the two stories I wanted to tell you are from a visit we made to Hiroshima and Nagasaki with church leaders from countries that say they are against nuclear weapons but continue to rely on them. The Germanys, the Japans, the Netherlands is, and the France, not so much France, they're committed to nuclear weapons. And we were looking for to be sure that we would have good seats for these church leaders on the morning of August 6th in Hiroshima. And I was so concerned that this happened properly, I went at 4:30 in the morning with a Japanese church leader to make sure we got seats. And the Japanese church leaders are Korean Japanese, who a young man who wasn't born at the time of the bomb. And we're standing there in the pre-dawn of, and Japanese pre-dawns in quite a few cities have these wonderful groves of pine trees full of cicadas who are singing to beat the band throughout the early morning pre-dawn hours. And I thought, that's nature is calling us to attention on this day when we remember the 70th anniversary of the bombing of Hiroshima. And as we're standing there, the Japanese leader says to me, "I've always felt guilty." And I said, "What? About the atomic bomb?" And I said, "How could that be? He's 35 years old." He said, "Well, on the second bombing, the day that this happened, the target was actually Kokura, the industrial city of Kokura. They wanted to pick cities that hadn't been bombed that summer. The Americans had already bombed 200 cities that summer in Japan. So they picked Kokura for the second demonstration. But it was socked in with clouds. And the bomber called back to Iwo Jima and said, 'We're running out of fuel. We can't get home. What are we supposed to do?' They said, 'Go to Nagasaki.' So they went to Nagasaki. And they found a hole in the clouds, and they threw the bomb into the hole. It was offset. It didn't fall in the middle of the city. But this man, standing there in that morning, felt guilty somehow, that because he would have been alive today, that was the connection. His parents were living in Kokura, and he felt like, in a way, he didn't have a right to be there, the way I understood what he said, because so many people were going to die. It should have been him." Now, think of what's behind that kind of comment. Something that happened before you were born, something that didn't happen, and your relationship to it. The second quick story is that very morning, sitting in Hiroshima, in the good seats we got, the sun was at about the place where the bomb exploded, about 800 meters above a bridge that makes a T across the river, and the bombers used the T as the site. The bomber used the T as the site for the bomb. And as it fell, it exploded there, and the ground is marked below it today, and you can see where the hypocenter was. Well, the sun was right there during the ceremony. And I don't know what it is, but the sun is really strong in Japan. Do you know why, Hiro? But the sun is amazingly strong in Japan. And it was just cooking us And what I thought of was, when that bomb exploded in that very spot, it generated temperatures equal to the temperature at the surface of the sun. For just a millisecond or two, and that's what radiated out. And your mini course in what nuclear weapons are today, we're not going to spend a lot of time on their effects, but just keep these things in mind. They kill three ways. They kill through heat, they kill through blast, and they kill through radiation. So the heat came to me just by feeling that strong sun and thinking of that sun not being 93 million miles away, but being there for those seconds of that blast that morning. At about the same time we were observing the event. The other two ways are blast, and you can look at charts about how far out the blast goes. It can generate winds of 300 kilometers an hour, do all kinds of things at different distances. And then, of course, radiation, and a little bit more about that later. The thing we have to celebrate here today is that this year has seen the adoption of a treaty by 120 countries to make nuclear weapons illegal. Those who have nuclear weapons somehow insist that this kind of destructive power is necessary for their security. A very un-Christian thing to insist, I think. But the rest of the world who doesn't have nuclear weapons are willing to do something about the weapons and have put together a multi-year effort to shift the discussion from the security-oriented discourse of the privileged, wealthy, and powerful countries to the actual impact that the weapons have on people and on the planet. And with 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 years of work about the humanitarian consequences of nuclear weapons, a treaty was finally agreed, a long, tortuous process, and it's such an accomplishment that the campaign behind this treaty, which involves some of the organizations in this city, including the World Council of Churches, won the Nobel Peace Prize, which will be given out on December 10th for the campaign. I'm just going to read you one paragraph of the preamble. Cognizant that the catastrophic consequences of nuclear weapons cannot be adequately addressed, that they transcend national borders, pose grave implications for human survival, the environment, socio-economic development, the global economy, food security, and the health of current and future generations, and then listen to this, and have disproportionate impact on women and girls, including as a result of ionizing radiation. That's your mini course on what nuclear weapons do. And if you have more questions, please bring them up. But I'd like to move into the views you might have of these events. To invite thought with nonverbal communication, this was also a scene that morning in Hiroshima last year or 2 years ago, where a Korean-Japanese dancer demonstrated life in the city that morning and then reacted to something. At first it was the sun, it was a beautiful, clear morning day, and then she begins to look troubled. And then she concluded her dance by pointing to the place in the sky where the bomber was coming. Now, can anybody change gears from this brief introduction to what our faith tells us about nuclear weapons? If I had to ask you, what about your faith would guide you a little bit in responding to this? And one of the easiest ways to do that, I think, and to invite comments would be, think of a Bible verse, think of a teaching that you've had in your life, which you feel is relevant to this event, even if the politics of making it relevant is a stretch, even if we've learned to be cynical, even if we think that this is something that is insoluble. I think we have to retreat to a simpler position about the basic things in life and what matters most, and start with that, relating our faith to that when we're faced by this horrendous miscarriage of human intelligence, human resources, and of everything we know about peace and shared security. Does anybody have a comment? Miriam.
I don't know. I don't know how pertinent it is, but we always, there's a, can't cite the verse in the Bible, but it's always troubling for people where God will visit those who do not honor the covenant. To the those who honor the covenant, he will support or uphold for the 10th generation, and those who don't, that's not even right. Andy better correct me, but so that there's an action on the people of this time or that time, and then the third and fourth and fifth generation have the consequences of that. And we always think how unfortunate and how cruel of God, but this is for far longer, and it's our own doing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I don't know if that, I mean...
Yeah.
And it's not God's doing. It's not God's doing at all.
Mm-hmm. Other comments? I think we're supposed to pass the mic so we can have this on the web. Is that right?
What I find interesting is that the nuclear weapons today would be considered a tool for it to sort of a way to maintain peace. Although I'm seeing it more as a threat today from certain countries who are pressuring on a political level to use this tool for political reasons. And I think it's obsolete, this particular technology. And so the damage it can actually do to all of us.
What's the relation you feel to your faith, though? Give us a faith value.
Well, for me, the link between establishing peace or being peace or having a peaceful environment is what I would say linked to, mm-hmm. to the faith.
Okay.
And that's it. But I find the rest a bit awkward.
Jesus is the Prince of Peace, right? Does that have anything to say about this? Thank you. Somebody else?
Thank you. I think nuclear weapons has the potentiality to cause damage equal to a so-called natural disaster, and therefore it's almost like playing God and causing that kind of catastrophe on somebody. That's ethically definitely unacceptable. And secondly, a biblical verse reminds me is because most of the wars are waged in the name of peace, and therefore peace they say when there is no peace. I think it's in Jeremiah somewhere it's written. Yeah. That's where they've taken the wounds of my people lightly. This is the fact or the paradox of all the wars that is waged. So that's what I would like to say in the context mm-hmm. of my faith.
That echoes well with the idea of the covenant, I think. When you mentioned creation and our stewardship. Andre.
Well, a couple of thoughts. One was quite simple, do not commit murder. And then I was just reminded of, you know, we go like, you know, Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God, your Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. Which reminded me that I was also just thinking in my head, Are nuclear weapons something very different, or is there actually a whole range of ways that we just abuse and destroy and corrupt and possess and are fearful, and nuclear weapons are one part and one particular extreme of that, but it's just, for me, it's very much part of the fallenness of us and mm-hmm. that pain. That's what I see.
Yeah. Yeah, is it different, or is it us?
I have two things that are contradictory. One is also in our tradition, we have stories where Jericho was totally destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
So we have within our tradition stories of kind of total destruction. And we have an image of apocalypse, which is there for us, that Jesus comes and develops and comes with the new heaven and the new earth, but there is also a kind of implication, false, I think, but that the old heaven and the old earth are gone and totally destroyed. And that sits within our tradition. So our tradition is not without its places that give us pause. But the other side that I more want to say is throughout the gospel stories, we are constantly told not to be afraid. And that is just an ongoing theme. Don't be afraid. Christmas is coming. The angel says, don't be afraid. Gabriel comes to Mary. Don't be afraid. Jesus all the time keeps saying, don't be afraid. Mm-hmm. And part of the big sales pitch for all of these weapons is we need to be afraid, mm-hmm. and of the separation of our time. So if we could just incorporate a little bit of this gospel that we don't need to be afraid, mm-hmm. that would help us quite a lot.
Yeah. Yes, please.
Yeah, I mean, I work for the World Trade Organization, so with a bit about politics, and actually the question of what's different about nuclear weapons with other weapons was, I have been thinking about this, and my personal idea is, well, let's think about, let's say, I guess the so-called security argument in short goes like following, right? For example, even in countries, we do have policemen which do carry weapons, and they need to use this weapon from time to time to keep the order. And if you analyze this in the international society, you may need some quote-unquote some policemen using some terrible weapons in order to keep peace in the world. But now that there's probably no denying the fact that there must be some kind of people who use force in order to secure. Ensure security. But my thought is, again, your question as to where's the faith is, for me, like in the Genesis, we human beings have been asked, among other things, to take care of this earth, right, where we're living on. And for example, this analogy of policemen is, I think it's okay for policemen to carry guns because they may need to use it to keep order. But if this weapon was bad enough to destroy your planet, which you're living on, I think that probably goes beyond, you know, some kind of tool in order to keep security. So so in this sense, nuclear weapons are probably far beyond this weapon, which you need. Unfortunately, we human beings sometimes need to keep quote unquote some order on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'll just pull a couple of things together
and go a little bit further. I think it's worth saying that the physics, we have some CERN people here, the physics are, you know, these are God's building blocks for the universe, and they're so beyond ken that I read once that if you could get complete fission of an aspirin's worth of uranium or plutonium, you could destroy a whole city with an aspirin, that much explosive. The actual fission that happens in the weapons is way less than 100%. I think 10% of what was in the Nagasaki and Hiroshima bombs actually went off. But this is God's building block for the universe. We're playing with it. Look what happens to us. And I think when history is told, they will say, in the mid-20th century, humanity invented a way to destroy itself, the first way. Now we have two ways. We've also got climate change. This one does it fast. Climate change does it slow. But they're tied, I think, to what Andre was relating to, that they're tied up with this very mundane habit we have of causing evil and being fearful, as Terry said, and other people. So it's really the degree of the damage that is being made possible by such a device, which I think singles it out for special. The category that appeals to me is to think of more and more we're facing with things that we can do, but we mustn't do. Things we can do, but we mustn't, because they violate so many rules. And let me just say on the consequences side, remember the term nuclear winter from the Cold War? Well, that was done without computers by smart people. They went through, did that again with computers. It turns out it's true, but it's a lot worse than they thought. So in India-Pakistan nuclear war, could literally kill 2 billion people through the famine, which would happen from the soot pushed into the upper atmosphere by just 50 Hiroshima-sized bombs on each side between India and Pakistan on cities used to incinerate the cities. So the magnitude, it really is cosmic in its own way. And I think that gives us great pause as people who believe something about the goodness of creation. Let me just
go through this little list. Some of these have come up from you. We're all made in the image of God, so every target is equal value, and it's a very high value. God loves everybody equally, doesn't have any favorites among the superpowers or the permanent five or anybody. Love God, love your neighbor, as we heard. That life is a priceless gift. Thou shalt not kill. Making swords into plowshares and taking care of creation. In the World Council of Churches, a couple comments on the kind of positions that's been adopted. Splitting the atom, is this a cosmic sin to use the energy of the atom in ways that destroy life as a sinful misuse of God's creation? The need to turn to those who know what we're talking about, and remember, the survivors of these two bombings are now average age 80, and in 10 years, there won't be any more to hear from. So their witness, one of them is going to be in Oslo on the 10th of December to receive the Nobel Prize on behalf of the campaign. Listen to survivors who cry out for an exodus from the nuclear age, from mass destruction, genetic mutations, poisoned lands and seas, radioactive threats. And in Northeast Asia, many, many Christians link nuclear weapons and nuclear energy, because they've seen Fukushima, as some of us were reacting strongly to Chernobyl. Live in ways that protect life. Christians are called not to accept that the mass destruction of other peoples can be a legitimate form of defense or protection for ourselves. And last week, Peter and some other people had the privilege to be at the Vatican, and Pope Francis did it again. He hit the ball right out of the ballpark. And he said, for the first time, the threat of their use as well as their possession is to be firmly condemned. The Roman Catholic Church has never put possession and use like that under the same condemnation. Because in the Cold War, they felt like you couldn't ignore the nuclear deterrence as a temporary, very regrettable form of security that could be abided for a few years until you got rid of them. Well, we haven't gotten rid of them. So he made history there when he spoke to us and then shook every one of our hands. If you want to shake my hand later, I'm happy to shake yours. You want to say something?
No, her hand as well.
Oh, he shook me. Yeah, shake her.